Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Well, last month, two young people lost their lives after taking drugs at a music festival. It brought to the forefront the debate on our current drug policy, under which the number of deaths caused by methamphetamines in particular has doubled in the past 7 years. During the 1980s, Australia was one of the first countries to enact a policy of, quote, harm minimisation, focusing on reducing supply and demand. As it stands, South Australia, the ACT and the Northern Territory have decriminalised cannabis, only in some cases by applying civil penalties if a person meets certain eligibility criteria. And in that sense, I suppose, they've followed trends elsewhere in the world, particularly in some states of America. But all other states have no decriminalisation options, really, for any illicit drugs. The former AFP Commissioner, Mick Palmer, who helped to implement the Tough on Drugs policy under the Howard government, has himself started advocating for a new approach, including pill testing at festivals. It's a vexed policy area, isn't it? He says the current prohibition model just doesn't work and gives too much power to the criminals who control both the distribution and the toxicity of the substances that people take. Joining me tonight is Gino Vumbaka, who's the president of Harm Reduction Australia. Gino, good to have you in the studio with us this evening, and welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you, Phil.
Kieran Palmer, who's clinical services manager and psychologist at the NOFS Foundation. Kieran, good to have you with us as well.
Thank you, Phil.
Welcome to Nightlife. You've been where you are is kind of the front line in a way, I guess, isn't it?
You could say that. we're working primarily with young people, young Australians and their families in all different stages of drug use and drug problems, and certainly not just that in isolation or all sorts of issues, including poverty, trauma, mental health.
Gino, can we start the discussion maybe with you? What is national drug policy anyway? What's it designed to achieve?
Well, that's a very good place to start. The National Drug Policy of Australia has to be signed off by all the states and territories. So what it is an agreement between all the governments about what they're going to focus on in addressing the supply, the demand, and also the harm from drugs. What we see, though, is that it tends to be a bit of a battle where you get to the lowest common denominator because they all have to agree. So if particular states want to hold out, then they can hold out, and you end up with a lot of motherhood statements that actually, you know, could arguably serve very little purpose in terms of guiding our drug policy. And what we see more often than not is policy on the run. It's supposed to provide a framework. Australia, as you said, since the 80s has had a harm minimisation framework for national drug policy, but that has probably slid back in the last 10 years.
Just explain what that means, Gino. What does that mean? Because I suppose my question, and I think it puzzles a lot of people, is, you know, what is drug policy designed to achieve? So for some people, it'll be putting criminals in jail. For other people, it'll be saying anybody who uses drugs should go to jail. Other people will say, oh, no, it's about, you know, it's about preventing people who take drugs from injuring themselves.
Yes.
What's our current policy supposed to be achieving?
It's all things to all people, policy. That's what motherhood statements end up being, is that you can draw whatever conclusion you want from a lot of the statements and directives in the national policy. That's where the battleground is a lot of times, about what should our drug policy actually be focused
on.
That's
part of the problem, isn't it?
Yes.
So we don't really know what we're trying to achieve here.
Well, some of us do. Some of us know quite well what we're trying to achieve. It is a battle of ideas at times, but it's also a battle of evidence and a battle of morality, which makes it very difficult at times to actually get what we would call evidence-informed policy and a realistic and common-sense approach to drug use.
But are we trying to have fewer people taking drugs, or are we trying to ensure that fewer people die, or both?
We're trying both. I don't think no one in the field who works in the field, or, you know, I've spent a lot of time working in the field as well, and professionals who work in the field aren't encouraging people to take drugs. But we just, as I say, live in the real world. People do take drugs. Humanity's, or, you know, humankind, always taken drugs of some sort, whether it's alcohol or any other substance. So it's about how we manage the harms from that for most people. And people grow out of it. People use drugs for a period, then they life intervenes and they do other things and they move on to, you know, move away from drug use. Mm. There's a cycle like that. It's actually trying to reduce the harm should be our principal policy.
Mm. Yeah, it's a vexed issue. I mean, just even saying that, I can hear people saying, no, that's not what it's about at all. Drugs are harmful and bad, and people who possess them are guilty of a criminal offence. They need to be caught and put in jail. Now, that's quite different to what you're saying, isn't it?
It is, but you can also argue that, you know, alcohol causes a lot of problems in society.
But that's legal.
But that's an arbitrary decision to make something legal or illegal. That, you know, that's an act of parliament. It's not drugs aren't inherently illegal. That's an act of parliament that decided this particular drug is illegal and that one is not.
Mm.
It doesn't mean that it equates to the level of harm it actually causes in society.
What elements of the current drug policy do you think are working?
I think our treatment system doesn't quite get the recognition it deserves. Mm. That actually a lot of our treatment systems have evolved over many years and are doing, do a lot of work internationally as well. And there's a lot of people looking at Australia about our, particularly our rehabilitation centres, but also some of our prevention programs and the like, and they're quite well renowned. They don't quite get the recognition that they should. We also used to lead in harm reduction. Back in the 80s and 90s, Australia was the leader in harm reduction development of policy and programs. But what we find now, that's where we work well. I think, you know, we actually have quite a commitment, and we used to have a lot of collaboration between law enforcement and health. That has gradually plied apart now. Not quite sure why that's happened, but I think it's like a lot of things tends to be an argument over money as well. When there's money on the table, then people stake a claim for it.
Hmm. 20 or 30 years ago, when the war on drugs was popular, you know, we might have thought, well, after 20 or 30 years, we'll make some progress here. Have we made any?
Not really, no. No, and there's a lot of unintended consequences that people...
When you say not really, in other words, if the war was supposed to stop people taking drugs and reduce the supply of drugs and put the big dealers in jail, how are we going?
Oh, failed miserably. Yeah. No, nowhere near achieving that. There's probably more drugs available, more available now, and more money being made than most people can even fathom from drug use. You know, when you look at the price of actually production to what's sold on the streets, the profit margin is just incredible.
Mm. It's funny, isn't it? I mean, it's a cliche to say that drug policy is full of hypocrisy. Mm. I mean, it's full of hypocrisy from top to bottom, isn't it? But partly because of that question that I raised at the beginning, that no one really knows. I mean, it's all things to all people.
Yes.
You know, you contrast it with something like the fight against HIV and AIDS, for example, when... Mm. Early on, Australia was very quick to say, we're not going to go to war on this as a wrong. We're going to go to war on this as a health issue, which we could get people to change their behaviour and therefore we'll stop the spread of this disease. And it was remarkably successful, wasn't it?
It was. And it actually had a huge impact on drug policy and the way we actually dealt with drugs in our community. Up until HIV... What most drug and alcohol workers would have done is said to people, until you're ready to stop using drugs, until you hit rock bottom, we can't do anything with you.
Mm.
When HIV appeared on the scene, that created the need for a huge rethink about how we actually run our drug treatment programs and our drug programs. We don't say to people, wait till you hit rock bottom, because that could mean you're HIV positive, rock bottom. So we had to engage with people while they were using drugs, and that meant we accept that there are people who are using drugs who want to continue to use drugs and may stop later. That doesn't mean you just don't engage with them or you throw them out and say, only come back when you want to stop. You actually work with them while they're using drugs. And when they stop using drugs, want to stop using drugs, you work with them then as well. So HIV was a real mark in the ground for us that we had to change the way we actually talk to people and the way we dealt with people who use drugs.
Hmm. Kieran, at the Ted Noffs Foundation, I mean, as I described at the beginning, you're saying you're on the front line, which you are, really. I mean, that's where you see a whole lot of people using drugs. Who's using them and why? Is it too simple to say that drugs are fun, or are people using it for other reasons?
There's a multitude of reasons. One of those reasons is that drugs are fun. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the realities that we need to squarely look at, that if everything about drugs was evil, moralistically inherently bad, no one would ever go back a second time.
I think that about methamphetamine. I said it when this drug first appeared. You know, everyone's up in uproar about it, but people have got to be taking it for some reason. I mean, if it's as bad as people say, you can't imagine anyone taking it. But
and that's why I mentioned
and this
at
often
the start.
Gets lost, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, it does, and that's why I mentioned that one really important thing is that we need to not just look at drug use in isolation, because working on the front lines, as you say, I mean, I'm working with young people and their families all across the spectrum of drug use, and particularly at what we call the pointy end, people with quite significant drug issues, drug addictions, drug dependencies, we don't just see the drug use in isolation. There is usually so many other factors involved. One of the biggest factors that we see is life trauma, that we work with young people who have been through often horrendous pasts involving neglect and abuse of all different kinds, growing up around domestic violence, for example, witnessing violence. And a drug like methamphetamine, whilst, you know, certainly we're not suggesting it's not a harmful drug, but what it can give to someone who grows up with an internal radar that's completely honed to finding danger and finding threat and stress everywhere they go, it can be the thing that actually finally gives them some confidence, for example, or finally gives them some pleasure in life. These are some young people who look and dress and act like every other young person, but their experience of the world around them is often very different. It's very fearful. They're very uncertain around other people. They're very uncertain within themselves. And it's these sort of states that people get in that require elements to cope somehow. And often drugs and alcohol fit into that picture. And what trauma can also do is shift the way that young people's brains actually develop, and those areas of the brain that we take for granted that are responsible for example, impulse control, or the ability to say no to temptations, oftentimes don't actually develop as they should. So these are young people with often a mountain ahead of them. And if it were as simple as just say no, that'd be fantastic. But it's really not as simple as that.
Mm. Gino, you said, Kieran, I'd like your comment on this too, that people take drugs for a while. Apart from marijuana, my impression is that people don't tend to take drugs all their life. Some people who smoke marijuana often do. But other drugs, amphetamines in particular, I mean, I don't know. Is that right? I mean, people tend to take them at a certain stage in their life.
A lot of drugs have different profiles of users. Certain drugs tend to be used by different populations. Some drugs are used by younger people. I think Gino does raise a good point, though, that we can often sensationalize this idea of the drug user. And the drug user is someone with a serious drug addiction who is involved in crime to get it, who's probably a criminal themselves, who's probably unemployed. Now, whilst there is a section of the population who fits this profile, there's a huge percentage of people out there who use drugs recreationally who don't fit that profile, who work, who are middle-income earners. And that's sort of what we need to keep in mind as well, that often those sort of stereotypes of the ice user or
the crazed user.
Yeah. And what they do is they really, really quickly raise a stigma. They raise a stigma around the individual themselves. And that can do a few things which are really, really counterproductive to actually moving forward. We know unequivocally now that the best outcomes are achieved the earlier in the piece that we step in. So in other words, the earlier that someone can address the issues associated not only with their drug use but all the surrounding things, the better the outcomes typically are. And that sort of stigma profile that's put on the drug user, particularly in a drug like ice, works to counteract that. People don't want to come forward and put their hand up and say, I've got a problem with methamphetamine. Why would they? They'd be possibly seen as a demon or a zombie. There might be anxiety that they'd lose their job or lose their kids. So we've got this reality that the earlier the better, and we've got a system that pushes people back up to 10 years in some cases before people can finally come forward.
How many people or percentage of the population take drugs? I mean, apart from alcohol, the legal ones, but illegal drugs. What percentage of the population take them? Do we know?
Well, we do from household surveys. You catch me out here, Phil, on the top of my head. But, I mean, we're talking in the hundreds of thousands and millions.
But probably, as a percentage of the population?
Well, you know, I'm guessing. I'm guessing. I don't have the figures in front of me, but there are household surveys. It'd probably be 15-20%. In that range would take, you know, in the last 12 months, if you're talking about, you know, have used a drug in the last 12 months.
Not regularly every day, but that's right. Have you taken an illegal drug in the last 12 months?
Interestingly, with that topic, and I'm a little bit like Gino here without the figures in front of me, some of the figures that I am familiar with, though, are the figures around methamphetamine. And this is goes back to that stigma where through media channels, for example, mainstream media channels. I mean, you know, we see all the ICE destroyers' lives and the ICE zombies running around, and we're in the grips of this ICE epidemic. It's the ICE age. There's this ICE scourge. It's taking over our kids. It's taking over our country. What we actually see in the household surveys, for example, typically published every 3 years or so, has been a steady decline in methamphetamine use.
Okay.
It's now down to, I believe just over 1% of the population has touched methamphetamine at all in the last 12 months. Of that 1%, it's about a quarter who have actually tried it 10 times or more. Maybe 12 times or more. So we're looking at a very, very tiny percentage of the population who are using it any more than once a month. So this sort of flies in the face of the whole idea of it being an epidemic as well. And terms like that, they spread fear and again, stops some of our most vulnerable and most marginalized people who actually require the help and support the most. It actually stops them from seeking it out and it actually stops them from feeling safe enough to put their hand up and ask for help, which is exactly what needs to happen earlier on in the piece.
Gino, should we have different attitudes about different drugs? Once upon a time, we were very uptight about marijuana. My impression is people are less uptight about marijuana these days. In fact, you see that in the changes to the law in some states, which have not decriminalised it, but made it a civil charge rather than a criminal charge. You see it in the move internationally in states in the United States, for example, which legalise it. Other drugs, of course, highly addictive drugs, which, you know, can ruin your life, like heroin, or for that matter, methamphetamine, which I understand is highly addictive as well. Do we need to distinguish between drugs rather than lumping them all in one big pot?
No, I don't think we do. I think where we need to draw the line is about personal use and possession versus people who are trafficking and dealing. And the reason I say that is that, and using alcohol as an example, we don't punish people for drinking, but if you drink and get behind the wheel of a car, then you're committing a crime that can be punishable. Or if you assault somebody...
Or if you come to work drunk, you can't work.
Yeah, exactly. There are penalties in place for being intoxicated.
And rightly so.
I'm not disagreeing with that. But that should be the case with any drug. So if someone's using cannabis in their own home and sitting there watching a movie and then going to bed, well, what business is it of the government to actually intervene and say, no, you're not allowed to do that? But then why any drug they were doing that?
Would you say the same as if, I don't know, they were having some ice at a party at their home on a weekend?
Well, that's their business in a way. They choose to do that.
No, I'm not trying to pin you on this. Yeah. But I'm just saying that you're saying that's the distinction. It's how it's used.
It shouldn't be the act of consumption that's criminalised. The mere act of consuming a substance is criminalised in this country. It should be your behaviour.
There are two big... I mean, it seems to me when I've thought about it that there are two issues in relation to drug policy which are of importance to people. One, society as a whole has a major interest in not having people wandering around who are intoxicated on drugs or anything else. You know, but they shouldn't be on the road, they shouldn't be operating machinery, they shouldn't be in positions where they can endanger other people's lives. And secondly, there's a health issue in relation to, you know, to drug use.
Yes.
That we've stigmatized the use of drugs far beyond those two things, though, and that's the point you're making, isn't it?
Yes, so we're actually penalizing people for making a choice about which drug to use, and for a lot of young people, and even people of different ethnicity and race, you know, there are different choices of drugs that may appeal to them for cultural reasons, for a whole range of reasons. But as I said, the lines are fairly arbitrary about what's illegal and legal. It's not based on level of harm. There are studies out there that actually assign a level of harm, potential harm to health, and a whole range of other factors to each drug. And there are a lot of drugs like ecstasy, maybe one that's fairly low down the table, but it's punishable at the higher end. And that's an arbitrary decision.
Absolutely, yeah, exactly. You can go to jail. Hmm. And people certainly have done. Society has an interest in not having everyone, not having a lot of people out of it all the time.
Yes.
Don't they?
Of course, yes.
Well, if you had a magic wand, what would you do with, would you decriminalise the use of it, or would you do something else?
I think you would decriminalise the use, personal use.
Of any drug.
Of any drug. And I just think that it actually is a personal choice that people make. But if you actually allow people to be informed about what they're doing, and this is when you raised pill testing earlier.
I want to get to that. Yeah.
And that one of the things is that people don't actually know what they're taking a lot of times and are making decisions about, uninformed decisions about what they're taking. Because it's illegal, it makes it difficult to actually engage with health professionals and talk to people about what you're doing. What Kieran's saying about people actually seeking help because of the stigma and the criminalisation. So you're actually allowing people to operate in the dark and without information.
I think people worry about pill testing for this reason, that it just seems completely counter to what the message is. If the message is don't take drugs, the message is drugs are illegal, it's against the law to take drugs, etc. And then all of a sudden you've got a facility at a public event where you can have your illegal drugs tested without fear of sanction, that people are saying, well, what are we on about here? Are we against drugs or not?
No, we're being
realistic. Do you understand why people would be confused?
I can understand that, but we're being realistic. I mean, when we operated the pill testing, the pilot in Canberra, we were inside the festival. Patrons had come through security, police, all that. They were in the festival, and they're about to pop a pill watching a band there. Hmm. And our message to them was just pause, come and see us. We'll actually tell you what's in that pill you're about to take, and then you can make a decision about whether you take it. And if you have a problem, we can tell you exactly where to go, what to do, and how to seek help immediately.
If drugs were semi-legal in this instance that Gino's talking about, Kieran, a lot of people think, well, yes, but if you did that, lots more people would take them, and that can't be good. What do you think about that?
I could see why that would be a belief.
What do you think? Do you think lots more people would take them if they thought there was no criminal sanction?
No, I don't. No. And we've seen this in other places around the world where when certain substances are decriminalised, the use may increase in a minor way for a time, plateau, and then start to decrease. We see this. We see this time and time again. It doesn't
Where has this happened?
So this has occurred in Portugal. I'm sure we're going to see it in places like the United States and Canada as well. But it again comes back to this idea of a lot of our ideas at the moment are based in fear rather than fact. One common one is we're basically condoning the use of drugs by doing pill testing. Now, if the reality was nobody ever took drugs at festivals and we decided to bring this in, all of a sudden kids started taking drugs at festivals, absolutely, I would say it's a bad idea. But as Gino says, we've got to be realistic. People are going in there. They're taking drugs in there, given no further information. What we can conclude is that they're going to take them regardless. This gives people a choice.
See, Gino, to me, it's just following the logic of all this, though. I think a lot of people also worry about this. They say, well, okay, if you got a pill test, you're only, you know, a tiny step away from saying we'll supply safe drugs, because after all, if the pills that you got are no good, then you'll be trying to get some that are safer from somewhere. In other words, if you're setting up a pill testing operation, you're almost saying we've got an interest in supplying to you drugs that are safe and won't kill you because they don't contain other toxic substances.
No. We don't have an interest in supplying the drugs. But
logically, it's not very far from pill testing to there.
What it will do, and this has been shown in Europe where they've been operating pill testing, particularly in Austria and other countries for more than 15 years, up to 20 years, is you do impact on the market. The illicit drug market is unregulated, so anything can happen in that market. What you do with pill testing is that people actually start to know what they're getting and what the suppliers are actually supplying, and they're getting credible information about what is actually in the substances they're buying, and that impacts on what the market actually can provide. And so what you find are that there's toxic drugs, there's contaminants in drugs, where pill testing operates.
Okay. So if you say, all right, so your argument is if you've got pill testing, you'll improve the quality of drugs because...
The safety.
Well, I suppose I'm using the
important thing to remember is that, you know, we had two people tragically pass away at DEFCON at that music festival. There are plenty of other cases in this country of festivals where people have overdosed and tragically died.
Mm.
We do a lot of work with families as well. Like we have Tony Trimmingham in Family Drug Support. He's a co-founder of me with Harm Reduction Australia. What families want when their kids go to the festivals, they don't want them to take drugs. But most parents know that their kids are, you know, they're in that environment and they may well take drugs. They want them to come home. They want them to come home. That's what they want. They want to hear the click of the door when their kids come home, whatever time. What they don't want is that phone call saying, your kid's in intensive care and you better get down to hospital to see them now.
Absolutely. I know. Absolutely.
And that's what we're trying to prevent.
Everybody is someone's son or daughter.
Yeah. And that's what we're trying to prevent. Kieran and I said, we're being realistic about this. You know, like it's not we're saying we're condoning your drug use or encouraging, but we're saying if they're going to do it, then we don't want them that tragedy to happen. I don't want it to happen to my kids when they go to festivals, and I don't want it to happen to anyone else's kids.
What do you think about that model in the legalized marijuana states in the US where you go to a shop and buy some? I mean, is that a model you would apply to other drugs? Because that would solve the problems of toxicity, wouldn't it?
Oh, look, there are different models. America, as America does, goes down very much a private route, a private business route. I'm not sure that that's the best model that we would go for. And, you know, people often say you have problems with alcohol and tobacco and their legal products. You wouldn't replicate that because of the problems there are with availability and accessibility being too high into younger people and people who shouldn't get access to it.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways of regulating it. What I think people miss, the point people miss about prohibition in particular is that the unintended consequence particularly has come forward in the last 5 years is the UN's reporting that we're getting anywhere up to 400 to 500 new substances being produced every year, the illicit substances that are psychoactive. And that's because people, if they can't get cannabis, are now buying synthetic cannabis. They don't want synthetic cannabis, but that seems to be more available and easy to get.
Mm-hmm.
And that is creating huge problems, particularly recently in New Zealand, where there are 20 deaths reported so far this year from synthetic cannabis. The only reason they're using synthetic cannabis is because they can't get real cannabis, what they would actually use. And so you actually pervert the market and you have these perverse consequences that no one wants and no one intends, but... Yeah, that, again, is because you're trying to operate in an ideal world rather than the real world.
We're talking drug policy, and is prohibition working? I think the answer is that it's not. I mean, anybody rationally who looks at it knows that, anybody who works in it, whether you're in law enforcement or anywhere else, knows that it's not working. Our guests tonight, Gino Von Bakker and Kieran Palmer. Gino is the president of Harm Reduction Australia, and Kieran is the clinical services manager and psychologist at the NOFS Foundation. They're pretty much on the front line of all this. But it's all very well to pontificate about drugs, but you're also talking about actual people's lives.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's that we can't forget that in all this, we can talk policy and we can talk politics. These are lives. In a lot of cases, they're young lives taken far too soon. We're ready for this. Australia is ready for this. We've got these ideas that everyone's terrified of this. In some of the polling that we've done through our Take Control campaign, people are ready for this. Parents are ready for this. People are sick of the head in the sand approach of just saying no. That it doesn't work.
We know it doesn't work.
People keep dying. Young people keep dying.
Mm.
And we've got mechanisms to keep them alive.
Just to be clear, Karen, what are you saying? You've got a magic wand here. What's the preferable drug policy that you're putting in place here?
What are the
elements of it?
We're part of a campaign at the moment called Take Control. And if people are passionate about this, they can go on the website, takecontrol.org.au, sign the petition. It's a common sense plan. The idea of it is taking control back. At the moment, as Gino says, we've got this unregulated black market. Essentially, what we're doing is saying to the criminal syndicates, you manage this, you handle it, you manufacture it, you figure out what goes in it, you sell it, you set the price, we'll just arrest the people who are using it or put them in psychiatric wards. And what we've got is jails full of drug users, not big-time drug dealers. It's all backwards there. So things like rolling out pill testing, increasing funding towards treatment, more drug monitoring rooms to keep people safe, to keep people alive, more early intervention services to try and identify populations, marginalized populations who are at higher risk of developing these sorts of issues, and ending criminal charges, quite serious criminal charges that stay with people for a long, long time for possession and personal use.
But people would still have to source drugs from criminals because that's where they come from, wouldn't they?
At the moment, yes, yes.
But and in your, I'm just saying, in your alternative world, which is you know an alternative to the current set of policy arrangements, that would continue, would it?
No, no. So in this ideal state,
yeah.
The criminal syndicates, criminal organisations wouldn't have control of this. That.
So where would people get their drugs from?
Possibly a distribution centre, maybe a pharmacy. I mean, we're certainly not naive enough to suggest that we wave this magic wand and tomorrow this is all going to happen. But certainly if I think about my kids, I've got young kids myself, do I want them to take drugs? Of course I don't. But I'm not naive enough to think that one day they might not experiment. And the thought of them potentially buying a substance over the counter at a pharmacist versus buying it from the guy behind the school, I know which one I would rather.
Hmm. Yeah, we're not there yet, are we, Gino?
No, we're not there. We're not there. And
but we probably are at pill testing, maybe, are we?
Yeah, I think I think that there's a growing understanding that what pill testing provides is an important service at music festivals and for people to take drugs. And as I said, it does. It gives us a lot of information as well about what's happening in the drug market, about understanding what sort of drugs are out there. But as I said, it impacts on that market as well. It's an unregulated market. And although, as Kieran says, we're not at that place where we can have pharmacists or, you know, government stores where you can buy drugs. That's not happening. But at the moment, we don't have any impact on that market at a consumer level.
Henry, hello.
Evening, Philip. Evening, gents. It's a fascinating conversation. I just heard Philip mention or ponder whether people take drugs at various stages of their life. And I just thought I'd ring in because I've just recently turned 50 and I think I took my first ecstasy when I was maybe 23 and you know, I'm still taking them these days with a very large circle of friends. I would consider us all in the middle to higher income bracket. And I don't consider us in any way that we have drug problems or that we're
just
know,
describe
that defines it.
Describe how you use them, Henry. I mean, do you
just in a social context? If we're going out more to a party,
once a week, once a month,
or a couple of times a month.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not much of a drinker at all. I've never been much of a drinker, and I find it quite hypocritical, the negative stance towards drugs these days in the face of the devastating effects of alcohol and even tobacco. That's why the nature of what you're talking about is interesting in the context of, further down the track.
Yeah, interesting, yeah. Exactly. Well, it's just something I think you were saying, Kieran, too, yeah. Jimmy, hello.
How you going, mate? How are you?
Yeah, good.
I'm definitely for it. I'm a bit younger than most of the people calling. I'm only 24.
You're talking, when you're for it, you're for pill testing.
Yeah, definitely. I've had a few people that have, passed from it, passed from taking them and overseas and here. And I really feel like if those things were available at those festivals, at clubs, wherever these people are taking them, I really, really think that a lot of people would stop ODing, stop, passing even, what I mean? And I really, really think that the government should consider it more than what it is. I understand, no one's condoning it, but I know that as a young person, these people are going to do what they want to do. They're not going to listen to someone if someone tells them to stop, they're not going to stop. So if they are going to continue, I really think that they should consider the pill testing or drug testing, whatever it is.
Okay. Gino, would you, you're still content, are you still content to have the AFP conduct, large and expensive intelligence gathering exercises to intercept the arrival of big drug shipments into this country?
Yeah.
You think that should still happen?
Yeah. We're not arguing against traffickers and organised, that's normally traditionally run by organised crime and criminal syndicates. We're not saying they should have a free rein. But and if you look at the figures, there are 150,000-odd drug arrests last financial year in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Close to 90% were for personal possession and use. and that's, you know, 120,000-odd people. I think the AFP were quite proud of the fact that someone's arrested every 4 minutes or something in this country for drug, you know, for a drug-related charge. But what they failed to say is that's mainly for using drugs, not the criminal syndicates, and they tend to get away with a lot more. I know they're a lot harder to catch. That's the reality of it. But the resources should be directed at that end, not actually getting the people on the street or the people going to a festival who, like an earlier caller said, you know, once a month you might use it in the circle of friends. What is the value of society spending, you know, $900,000 a year on a sniffer dog or whatever it costs to find him and, you know, put a charge against him that'll have lifelong consequences? What's the point?
Yes, we had two young kids at work, says my texter, 20-somethings. They tested positive while driving days after usage of weed, i.e. marijuana, cost them their jobs and defaulted on their car loan. Seems a bit harsh. Yeah, maybe. The point, I suppose the point we're emphasising here is that anybody who rationally has ever looked at this knows that prohibition hasn't worked. It just hasn't worked. I mean, we might like it to work and we might think we should try harder, but the penalties for drug use and dealing in particular are very harsh, the harshest penalties there are. Certainly you go to jail longer for importing large quantities of drugs than you do for murdering someone, usually. So we've tried very heavy prohibition and very heavy penalties, but it hasn't worked, has it, Kieran?
No, and it's a question of balance. You know, where, as Gino says, no one's suggesting that we pull law enforcement out of this picture altogether, and no one's suggesting that we decriminalise assault.
No.
As Gino says, it's about the behaviour associated with the drug use, but it is a question of balance. We need all the elements to fall in place, but at the moment, the scales are tipped well in favour of law enforcement. And as I mentioned before, our jails are full of drug users, not of major drug dealers. And if we think about those populations, we had our caller before who, you know, it sounds like earns a decent living and then uses ecstasy in a circle of friends. But if we think about those in our community, those who are living in poverty, those who are marginalised, those who have had a life of trauma, these are the ones who are typically higher at risk of developing drug problems for a variety of different reasons. These are individuals who are often running behind the pack to begin with. And particularly when we look at things like trauma, it affects the way that people relate with each other. It affects their performance at school. So already they're behind the eight ball there. Oftentimes, and certainly the young people that I see come through our programs haven't finished school. They've dropped out, really low literacy levels. And I know that juvenile detention and even jails are full of people with different learning difficulties and different intellectual levels. So these are people who are typically behind the pack anyway. Throwing very serious criminal charges onto people for essentially taking part in activities that are there to help them cope and oftentimes to help them feel any sense of connection in life, any sense of confidence within themselves, or just to just not feel completely crappy for a night about who they are and their circumstances and the way that life is. These are really serious charges that don't leave them. So what our drug policies are essentially doing at the moment is they're working against what we want to do. They're hurting our kids, basically. And it's further disadvantaging an already very disadvantaged group of people.
Kieran Palmer's my guest, Clinical Services Manager and Psychologist at the NOFS Foundation. They deal with people who are taking drugs. So Kieran speaks from a position who deals with it every day. Gino Vumbaka is also with us, President of Harm Reduction Australia. Murray in Perth. Hello, Murray.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Not bad. You're an ex-copper.
Yes, I am. And I've had the, on a couple of occasions, to arrest someone who's been high on meth. And it's scary, the strength that they've got. It took six of us to arrest one bloke one time. I think that the government should take control of it. And so you've got quality control and legalise it and educate people to the effects of it. It would take the money from the criminal gangs and it goes to the government and they can use it for education and other things that the government uses it for.
Did you ever feel you were getting on top of it as a policeman?
No, never.
No.
No, they can I've seen druggies, they go out, get some pseudoephedrine, get some acetone, take the tops off two light bulbs, and use them as the bowls to cook it up in,
mm-hmm.
and then inject it.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, Murray. Thank you. Plenty of calls on this too. Mark, g'day.
G'day, how are you going?
Not bad.
Great conversation, thanks.
Your thoughts? Hey, your thoughts?
On the pill testing, well, our government, we pay them to look after us, protect us, and protect our children. So our children are going to do this sort of thing anyway when they're out having a good time. As teenagers, 20, however old, whatever. There's a method available to prevent them from dying from poisons, and our governments are preventing that happening. Why is that? You've got to question that. At the end of the day, well, you really do have to question that. And on just a real quick second point, as a 52-year-old, if there's a receptor in my brain that matches up with something that I can just pick up as I'm walking through the forest and have a bit of a chew on, and what is the problem with that, and why would that be a problem?
Okay. David on the Central Coast. G'day, David.
How you going?
Not bad.
Great conversation. Should have had it more often. I used to smoke marijuana. I've smoked it for years. I took speed when I was younger. I'm now nearly 50.
Mm-hmm.
I don't smoke pot anymore. I don't take speed anymore. But I do have a little bit of cocaine every now and then, right?
Mm-hmm.
That at my mate's place. But that doesn't harm anybody. It doesn't harm me. I don't do it all the time. I own my own business. I do, like, I don't go to work off my face. I do it once on the weekend, every now and then. I don't know how the government can class that. If I get caught, I go to jail, lose my business, or I get fined, lose my business, and I get a criminal record. How's that fixing any of the problems that are in the mainstream? If a kid wants to take drugs, you're not going to stop him. He's going to do it. So pill testing is a great idea. Should have happened years ago. The government's got to get serious about trying to fix not the problem, but trying to make the problem less of an issue. You know what I mean? It's just not right that the government can't focus on harm minimisation. This is what it's about. It's about harm minimisation. If a kid's going to take drugs, he's going to take drugs. You're not going to stop him.
Mm.
Make it less of an issue.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Gino, my text is, I haven't been able to get through. I've been calling from Melbourne. I haven't got an answer. This is my text. It's one thing to offer pill testing, but this shouldn't result in it becoming normalised. The premise that prohibition hasn't worked is rubbish and subjective. What does working look like? No one using drugs? By the same standard, you could say that the policies on anything haven't worked. Theft, rape, road safety. What if prohibition working actually was 1% to 2% of people using drugs rather than 10 or 20%? What is it?
Well, if it did that, then fine, but it doesn't do that, and we'll never get to that level. We'll never see that prohibition achieve that. That's the issue. What we are seeing is extraordinary levels of harm. We're seeing up to 2,000 related overdose deaths related to drug use. We're seeing people being criminalised and put in jail and having their lives ruined in terms of occupational opportunities as they grow up. There's lots of harms that are caused by prohibition. That's the problem. We're not suggesting we have a silver bullet here, a panacea, and we can solve everything, but there are problems that we can reduce and harms we can reduce with fairly sensible policies. Just, you know, have your magic wand. What was quite unfortunate was when the two people died at DEFCON, the first reaction of the Premier was to say, how can we make the penalties tougher? As if you've already said they're not tough enough. I mean, like you can get life imprisonment.
They're extraordinarily tough. You can go to jail for life.
So. Yeah. You know, as if that is somehow make them tougher, have more police is going to change it. It won't. It won't change it. And then the next idea was what, to ban music festivals? You know, it's like the Footloose movie or something. You know, you're going to ban dancing and music and think that kids are then, I don't know, going to do something else. But you just have to accept that it occurs, and how can we reduce the potential for harm occurring?
It is similar in a lot of ways to the, not in terms of the behaviour, but just in terms of the overall themes, to the road safety issue. We know that many, many people are injured on the roads every year. And we know that many, many people are injured as the result or from the result of automobiles, from cars. Do we ban cars because we know that cars kill people? No. We put in seat belts, we put in speed cameras, we put in speed limits, we put in airbags, all to mitigate those risks. And that's what this is all about. There are risks inherent in all this. Drugs, psychoactive drugs, including alcohol and tobacco, have the potential to harm, to do harm to people. We know that banning them doesn't do anything for all the reasons that Gino's just outlined. Mm-hmm. So it's about mitigating those risks and managing the harms. At the moment, we don't do very well managing the harms. We're very, very reactive after the fact, after someone's done harm to themselves, after someone's gotten sick, after someone's died. It's not enough to know what's in a substance that's killed someone. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to act before. We need to get proactive about this issue.
Joe from Kensington says, part of the problem here is that our political class are the sort of nerds who've never tried illicit drugs and have no frame of reference.
Not sure about that.
Not sure about that, actually.
There was opposed drug testing in Parliament. So.
Well, I think the evidence would be, wouldn't it be, Kieran, based on what you know, that there's a, you know, that you would expect that a fair percentage of elected representatives have tried drugs or are maybe even still using drugs.
Oh, I couldn't comment with any authority, but there's a chance.
I'm just thinking across the population of that you know,
statistically, yes, of course.
Statistically, across the population. Yeah, Peter, hello.
Hello. Hi. It's Pedro, but very similar.
Yes.
Great evening. I agree 100% with the last guy who called from Sunshine Coast. You know, I think we should stop beating around the bush and face reality how it is, you know. Young kids or people in general not going to stop trying and using drugs. It is a normal thing if most people are doing it, and we should be definitely testing pills and regulating it and possibly decriminalizing most drugs, really.
Okay. All right. We've got quite a few calls, actually, in a similar vein. Kate from Wollongong. Hi, Kate.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm very much enjoying the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I come from the Netherlands. I grew up there in the 60s and 70s, and I never used any drugs. I went back about 10 years ago, and I tried with some family members. I tried a joint that was being shared, so marijuana, with other words. And I must say, we were really nervous. We've had an emotional day the day before, and I was just so amazed how two puffs, and I don't inhale, made me so calm. The tears went, and I thought, this is very much like valerian, which I use if I'm upset normally, and we grew up with it as children. And I thought, what is the big deal? You know, we are allowed to drink here alcohol in big quantities, whereas marijuana is a herb, basically. Why can't we use it in moderation? Why can't we use it for recreational purposes? Like, I don't drink an occasional glass of wine, but why would I have a criminal record for using a herb? Because the government hasn't gone past that idea that, you know, it's a plant and it grows in your garden. And back home, people are allowed to have, I think, 5 or 6 plants per household.
Mm.
And that's also, in a way, discrimination, because if you have a household with 10 people, you still have only 5 plants. But that's just the point.
I get the point you're making, Kate. I get the point you're making. Lots of people in the drug business, I mean, you two, I've spoken with others too, who have very similar views, who say, look, you know, we're there, we're working in it. The current policies aren't working. So that's the advice that goes to government. Why do we have this disjoint between what governments say and what the advice they're receiving?
Governments think that what the population want is a tough on drugs approach.
Right.
And I think there's a disconnect there. I think they actually have started to believe their own rhetoric, and they think that conventional wisdom says you must always be tough on drugs, and they're too scared to change. Mm. And they should have some more courage.
Because it would require a major public conversation to change,
yes,
wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. That's just what you think should happen.
Absolutely. And look, I would completely disagree with the government's standpoint on that, that Australia wants that. Where Australia is ready for this.
Yeah, well, judging by our calls tonight and texts, I must say, there's some evidence for that, Kieran. Good to talk with both of you. Thank you. Kieran Palmer's from the NOS Foundation. Gino Vormbacher is from Harm Reduction Australia. Thanks, gents.
Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
Good to have you both in.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.